Good Morning Football is a production of the NFL in partnership with iHeartRadio. NFL playoffs continue this weekend. It is Championship Sunday. The dream closer, the stakes high as ever, and the remaining four teams looking to punch their ticket to Super Bowl 56 in Los Angeles. Four teams, two champions, one destiny. The AFC NFC Championship games presented by Intuit TurboTax, live kicking off Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern. Visit NFL.com/schedule for the full schedule. Smiles all around here at the breakfast table. Welcome to Good Morning Football. We are live in New York City, Tuesday, January 25th. The countdown to LA is on. My name is Kay Adams, Peter Schrager, Kyle Brandt, Pro Bowl Hall of Famer Chris Carter. We've all spent a lot of time in LA. Kyle used to live there. You still go there every weekend. Mm-hmm. Are you excited about Super Bowl 56?
Oh, LA's nice. Mm-hmm. That's one of the, should be like five destinations for the Super.
That's it.
Let's go LA. Let's go Florida. We got a couple spots in Florida.
Vegas?
Got to give Vegas a little taste.
New Orleans?
Got to give Vegas a little. New Orleans always got to be in the party. And then we'll rotate to Arizona.
Detroit.
Minnesota.
It was a good one in Minnesota.
We were great.
Yeah.
Draft. So I, far as, you know, venues go, and Vegas has a couple of those in their backyard coming up. The Pro Bowl is next week after Championship Weekend, but we're going to stick with the four teams and the lead.
Lead block.
Rematch. AFC Championship game. The Bengals. They took down the Chiefs in Week 17, 34-31. Yesterday, Andy Reid, who likens the Super Bowl to chocolate cake, spoke about what Kansas City needs to do to make sure he can eat that chocolate cake come Super Bowl.
They made big plays on us, and both sides of the ball, where they were able to slow us down and then pick it up on the offensive, their offensive side. And so, you know, we've got to do a better job all the way around. It wasn't a fluke. I mean, they beat us. And so they're a good football team. And it's important that we have a great week of preparation here. And that's one reason why the urgency level was there even yesterday, once the game was over, to get busy.
Buffalo gave them everything they got, and they still lost at Arrowhead last week. So high task for this Bengal squad that did have success. Granted, that was in Cincinnati. Mm. So what can the Bengals do against this Chiefs squad that the Bills didn't?
The number one thing you have to do in a situation like this, it's Tuesday. It's the NFL off day. But guys are getting ready for championship football, so they'll be trickling out the building. From the time tomorrow morning when they put the game plan in, the players have to know that it's going to be successful. That's the way you're able to pull off a big upset in the game. You can't trying to put in something, the guy's like, I don't know if this is going to work. So from a mentality standpoint, this is a young football team. Mm-hmm. They have totally bought in. But in championship week, it becomes more important. Mm-hmm. And then from a strategy standpoint, there's a few things they need to do. People say, oh, that's fairly simple. We'll win time of possession. Well, this year when the Bengals have one time of possession, they are 6-1. Win time of possession, Joe Mixon must touch the ball 20 times. When he touches the ball 20 times, guess what happens? They're 7-2. And the last ingredient to be able to pull off the big win, to make sure Andy Reid doesn't get that chocolate cake, because he's going to eat, but make sure he doesn't get any chocolate cake, is let's move the pocket. We know the 9 sacks from last week. We see it, most of it coming up the gut. Joe Burrows is the only quarterback in the NFL this season to have over 1,000 yards outside the pocket passing. So I'm going to move the pocket. He's a great athlete, played good high school basketball in Ohio, dual athlete. So I'm going to move that pocket to the left, make his launch point so they don't know where to find him. Tennessee knew where to find him. But those are the three things that I'm going to do if I'm the Bengals, and that's how you go into Kansas City and hit them in the
well
mouth.
Well thought out.
Yeah, it's a great game plan. And to your point, the players might be off, but I was texting with Zach Taylor yesterday. This is not like, oh, it's house money. Look, we got nothing. They want to win. This guy thinks he can win, and he knows his players have bought in too. And one of the ways they can do that is to use Mixon, because whereas Buffalo maybe didn't utilize the run game outside of Allen's legs, Cincinnati's run game is better than Buffalo's. Sorry, Devin Singletary is a fine player, and he picks it up at the end of the season. Mixon and this team really do have a better run game than what Buffalo has. So that to me is, it does two things. One, it puts a pounding on that Chiefs defensive line. It makes them disrespect them. It makes them in the late fourth quarter like, ah, we've been having to hit the entire time. And B, what it does is it keeps Chris Jones away from Joe Burrow because, gosh, Jeffrey Simmons just might have had another sack on Burrow while we're sitting here at the table.
A lot.
Nine sacks they had last week, and that's not acceptable. They can't just drop back and throw it every down like the Bills. That is just not what their offense is, and that's not what their offensive line is. This is no insult to the five up front, but they have to protect Burrow better, and they can't let this guy feast on him. So to me, it's not as much Burrow, Chase, Higgins, all those guys. They're all going to be important. It's establishing Joe Mixon early and then keeping 95 off of the quarterback because I'm not saying they were lucky that they won, but Tannehill gave them three interceptions, and that defense played awesome to get those three interceptions. Yeah. I don't know if they win the game if Burrow gets hit nine times. If he gets sacked nine times, they're not going to stand a chance. It's really hard to win an Arrowhead, and it's really hard to beat the Chiefs twice.
Zach Taylor is a texter, a big emoji guy.
Teardrop laughter.
No, I hope I'm not insulting myself.
Rise and grind, dude.
Rise and grind.
Which coach uses the most emojis?
A lot of emojis from Kingsbury. No,
Kingsbury does mostly selfies, I would imagine.
nothing. Mike Zimmer, huge emoji guy.
I don't think Zimmer is. I can't see a lot of thumbs up from him. As much as we're talking about the sack on Burrow. The Bengals got to grab Mahomes. There were so many plays where the Bills had him. They had him. It was one of the slipperiest games Mahomes has ever played. I mean, his scrambling was crazy in that game. When you get 15, you got to bring him down. And the other thing that they have to do that the Bills did not do, you got to get a takeaway. You got to give me one, just one. The Chiefs have won 11 in a row when they have no turnovers with Mahomes. 20-3 overall when they have no turnovers. 20-3. Now, here's the interesting part. 20-3 with no turnovers. One of those three is to the Bengals a few weeks ago. So you might say, well, we didn't have any turnovers against us, and we beat them. It was in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And do you really want to bet on lightning striking twice against this guy in his fourth title game? I don't. Just give me – I don't care if it's a bounce off a defensive lineman's helmet, if it is a fumble from a tight end. I need one takeaway. The Bills had zero. If the Bills had one little garbage fumble or interception, they win that game. They had zero. It is so hard to beat Mahomes when you don't make him lose any rounds. That right there, grab him, and then if he throws that stupid pass, pick it off. Because I don't think Cincinnati can win in Arrowhead if the Chiefs have no turnovers. Maybe they'll prove me wrong.
No.
But they won that game with no, because their wide receiver had 266 yards. If he had 226, I think they lose. So you just don't want to bank on that again. You need to make them blink at least once, just once.
But isn't that the biggest thing that Joe Burrow did in that first match that Josh Allen failed to do in this game? He got it in the hands of his best wide receiver. Stephon Diggs did not get the ball. He didn't get targeted. He'll get it to Ja'Marr Chase. Tyrann Mathieu was in the game the last time. We're talking about Josh Allen playing a near-perfect game. Joe Burrow did play a perfect game up against Kansas City. It's a different place, but they also have an extra day of rest, and that matters. You talked at length about the exhaustion of players. I imagine the Chiefs are emotionally exhausted after this game up against the Buffalo Bills, and now they get to host, but we have Ja'Marr Chase, who had caught 11 of 12, 266, three scores that day. We, of course, need to keep Joe Burrow protected. And, of course, time of possession and running the ball. But, you know, he can winning a shootout with Patrick Mahomes. Do I want to get in that situation? No, but he has shown me already this year there are very few quarterbacks that I trust that can go there with Patrick Mahomes toe-to-toe, and he is absolutely one of them. So, I don't know. Tyrann Mathieu is going to be a huge deal here, whether or not he is on the field, but I like the benefit of the extra day of rest, and I hope they use that to their advantage. But I say throw the ball. Play your game. Mm-hmm. It worked, and it will work.
There's some huge holes in Kansas City's secondary. Even if Tyrann Mathieu is there, we know that they're going to be playing zone, so I'm with you. First game against the Bengals attacked them outside. Now I do like Buffalo and tack them right down the middle. That's where Gabriel, he's going to be on the show later on, that's where he was wide open. Three of his four touchdowns, straight down the middle.
Gabriel Davis joining the show. He'll give us his insights on this Chiefs squad, the Bengals preparing for it. But get that ball in the hand of your best player and you might win this one, Bengals. Let's bring in Tom Pelissero this morning. Good morning football to you, my friend. Let's keep it right here in New York with those Giants. They hired their GM. What is the latest with the head coach search now?
Well, Kay, the Giants head coaching search is certainly accelerating now that their new GM, Joe Shane, is in place. On Monday, the Giants interviewed Cowboys defensive coordinator Dan Quinn for the job. Now, Quinn grew up in Morristown, New Jersey. He was a Giants fan, had a Lawrence Taylor poster on the wall. This is a dream job of sorts for Quinn. He is also in the mix elsewhere, including in Denver and in Minnesota. Today, the Giants will have a second interview with Bills offensive coordinator Brian Daboll, a guy who obviously has a relationship with Joe Shane, going back to their days together in Buffalo. Daboll's offense certainly put on a show the other night, though he is now available to be hired because the Bills, of course, lost to the Chiefs. Later on this week, they're also expected to speak to Brian Flores, the former Dolphins head coach. A big week in New York, where there is one of the eight current head coach vacancies, Kay.
We'll talk about Sean Payton a little bit later. We've got Ian Rappaport. We've got Gabriel Davis. We'll talk Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, all of that coming up right here on Good Morning Football. Thank you so much. Tom Pelissero, we saw the game between the Bills and the Chiefs on Sunday. Was it the best ever, Chris Carter?
It was really, really close. Stay tuned.
Greg's best ever.
And we'll let you know.
I think it's the greatest playoff game we've ever seen.
Don't tell them.
Tease it. We'll debate.
What about Falcons Vikings?
All right, so we're now 15 days removed from the Monday after the regular season, and we still have eight head coaching vacancies. No one's been hired, not one. There hasn't been one of those where slam dunk, we're getting it. Nope. Mm-hmm. So they're still interviewing, and we figured it would be a great time to get back into the coaching carousel. But before that, let's talk about Sunday's game.
All right.
Right now is time for we in or we out. I'm going to say a statement, and you tell me if you agree or disagree. Play at home. We did a lot of talk yesterday on Bills Chiefs, and I know we are sometimes subject to hyperbole or recency bias, but I said it was the greatest playoff game we've ever seen. But were the stakes high enough for it to be? Here is the statement. A divisional round battle can be considered the greatest postseason game ever. Mm-hmm. Are we in or are we out? Chris Carter.
I got to be in. I mean, the action and professional football, I try to teach people. This is not high school. In high school, we cheer for the kids. In college, oh, man, college pride. But they're still kids. In pro football, people are being paid. These guys put on an exhibition of how to play offensive football. 700 yards, the number of points in the last 2 minutes, lead changes, not ties. I mean, lead changes. Mm-hmm. The expertise under the gun. The reason why you practice. The reason why you sacrifice is for one day, when they turn the lights on, I can show people what we can do. And they did it for us. I believe it was the best. Only thing that would compete is Brady coming back against
Atlanta. Okay, but that's an argument because that's an actual stakes.
In the Super Bowl, but a lot of mistakes there. This was stellar play. I'm in. I'm totally in.
I'm in, but it hits different if they lose to the Bengals. You know what I mean? Like, I'm in. This could be legendary, but it adds so much more to the legacy, the legend, the lore of it. If the Chiefs do this, beat the Bengals, go win the Super Bowl. So there's levels to it. In a vacuum, great, but it hits different if it stops now. Mm. And I think we'll look back at it a little differently, like, oh, yeah, but they lost to the Bengals the week after instead of they went on. That was the start of this, America's Game episode that it'll be written about in years
if
to
the
come.
Chiefs win the Super Bowl, it'll age really well. But that
or
was
if they get game, there, yeah. I think it adds something to it.
It does. I'm in on this. I'm out on Peter's divisional round slander. Why are you looking down the divisional round? This is the Elite Eight of the NFL. There's been some great NCAA tournament games, Elite Eight. I'll take it, and I'm in for a bunch of reasons as the best game ever, because sometimes people, these games come out and they're 56-52 and someone's like, there's no defense. There's defense in this game. Both teams punted. There were multiple punts. And I have to tell you, I think the most underrated part of this game by far is that in this modern lens through which we watch games and are terrified of bad calls, there was four penalties in the whole game. And I think that really made it watchable. Once we were realizing we were getting a classic, I felt this fear of like, oh my God, there's going to be a bad pass interference penalty that everyone's going to be so mad it's going to ruin the game. As it turns out, it was the overtime policy, but that's a different story. There was four penalties total, and there was no turnovers. It was clean. It was beautiful. It was a modern display of talent that I feel like has been building towards for 10 years, and I'm completely in on it.
You look at this game, though, and you say that's a more legendary game than the Nick Foles Super Bowl win over the Patriots.
You know why? Nick Foles. These two guys are future superstars, current superstars. Nick Foles is this weird enigmatic presence that we don't really can't define. This is superstar, and I think that was part of it, the casting.
Okay, to your point, consider one of the greatest games of all time is the Kellen Winslow game, Chargers versus Dolphins. Offense. The very next week, that Chargers team goes to the conference championship game and plays in freezing cold weather and loses to the Ken Anderson Bengals.
Yeah, I don't even know what you're talking about.
And it's like, all right, so it's a great NFL Films moment, but is it the greatest game ever? I don't know.
It wasn't in the Super Bowl, and then the week after, the Patriots had lied. We wouldn't be talking about it.
Yeah, I think the Super Bowl, to me, I might be out. I might say Super Bowls with all the stakes and with that Lombardi trophy in the balance.
I respect that.
Makes those the biggest games.
A lot of times the Super Bowls have a play at the end, whether it be the Steve McNair comeback. That game wasn't great for three quarters.
That's why I was leaning into this one.
Start to finish.
The consistency of the greatness.
Yeah.
Not on someone else's mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Greatness.
I know.
Oh, begot by greatness.
Yeah.
Oh, begot by greatness. Oh, and one more. That's the reason why I would put it up there.
One of the coolest things of the weekend was that the first game was great, came out to the final field goal, it was a huge upset. The next game might have been an even bigger upset. Then we had the huge comeback on Sunday, and then we were like, it can't be topped.
But how is it going to age, Shriggs? You know, like, how is this game going to age in a couple of years compared to what the Super Bowl will look like? We'll see.
I think it actually is already going to be legendary, but we'll see if we get, like, 10 more Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes matchups, and we'll always point to this one.
I think that has something to do with it. The arc of these players, especially Patrick.
It's part of the story.
All right? And can Buffalo, can they get back into this scene? And NFL schedule makers, hey, let's put this on the docket like we used to do for Brady and Manning. Let's see them play once a year.
Jordan scored 63 against the Celtics. They didn't win.
No.
You know, they got destroyed.
Seventh.
But everybody remembers that game.
Our producer, Quab, just texted me, what about Jerome Bettis fumbling and then Roethlisberger tackling?
No.
Doesn't count.
Good.
It was a great one. Speaking of the Bills, their offensive coordinator, Brian Daboll, put on such a show Sunday night that he is now the hottest name in coaching circles. And he's going to be in East Rutherford today interviewing with the Mara family and the Tishes for his second interview for the Giants head coaching position. But he's also being considered for the Dolphins job. Looking at the landscape of the NFL, my statement is this. The Giants head coaching gig is more attractive than the Dolphins head coaching gig as we head into 2022. Kyle, we in or we out?
I'm out. I'm out on the Giants being more attractive. What am I walking into? Okay, so quarterback, I don't know. The star player is always hurt, the running back, and we're going to have to pay him or something. Mm. You're basically taking the job being like, oh, my God, these draft picks better work, and if they don't, I'm out. The Dolphins job, you're walking, you're like, all right, Jalen Waddle looks like a great player. We have some really good players on defense. We have some draft picks coming down the next few years ourselves. I like Miami. There's a different kind of pressure there, and no state income taxes, so I'm going to go Dolphins. You have to mention it. If I wasn't going to do it, Cave's going to do it.
It was the first thing I was going to mention.
Do it again.
You stole it from me. I'm going to say I'm out on this. It's obviously the Dolphins. It's back-to-back winning seasons and Van Ginkle.
Andrew Van Ginkle. Good
in
call.
The mix there. But more importantly, you don't have to rebuild. You don't have to decide what a culture is. You don't have to deal with the headlines here. And they have a better overall roster. You get Waddle. You get Xavier Howard. And I looked it up. Cap space, guys, they are sitting pretty. They look awesome. Mm-hmm. They have the most cap space. Nobody has more. $70 million. If Tua doesn't work out this year, you have two first rounders in next year's draft. So you've got a decision, but you've got a buffer too. This is a beautiful job, and that's where I would want to go, especially because of the taxes, but also Van Ginkle.
Yeah, you guys are smart. I moved to Florida in the mid-90s.
Okay.
And my agent, one of the first things he told me, after he told me you're going to move to Boca Raton, I'm like, I'm 25. What am I going to do in Boca Raton?
Sure.
He said, I'm going to save you a boatload of money. Okay. Your taxes, your house would basically be for free. I said, okay, I can listen to that. And I live 40 minutes from where the Dolphins train and from their stadium. We're probably like 40 minutes from where the Giants train. There's no comparison.
Uh-huh.
Unless you told me there was a huge cap, they had some young quarterback on his first contract, that they had a number of first-round draft picks. But no, it's overrated, the marketing in 2022. You can be anywhere. Look at Joe Burrow and them. They're doing all right in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They're doing all right in Cincinnati. Like, you don't have Green Bay. The players are doing all right.
That's
there.
A good point.
To me, landslide.
Mm.
Take the Miami landslide. Gig on the field and off the field.
Yeah, and just a note, Daboll, whereas he doesn't have any real relationship with Daniel Jones, he was Tua's offensive coordinator at Alabama. Mm. So he might walk in there. They might be able to open that suitcase. Now, look, neither job has been offered to Brian Daboll. He might end up empty-handed. Last year, there was a lot of talk he might be going to L.A., and they hired Brandon Staley, and people were shocked. Like, wait, I thought Daboll was going to L.A. So we'll see how he interviews today, but there is something to the Giants' mystique, no? Am I just a nostalgic?
Well, I mean, it's always about the nostalgia. That's the problem. It's always, yeah, but remember?
To like me, it's, as a guy who grew up in New Jersey and watched Parcells and then watched Coughlin, like, I don't know. I still look at... What are we doing over here?
I had to send my boy Daboll a little something. It was Florida, New York. I had to send him a little something.
This is Brian Daboll. Brian Daboll, I'm sending you a voice message from the Good Morning Football Breakfast Table. We are live on the air.
Let's go, bro.
Chris Carter just handed me the phone. Peter Schrager says hi. Kyle Brandt says hi.
What a Dolphins job.
We hope you're doing great. We just decided you're going to Miami because of weather, no taxes, the fact that you get to inherit Van Ginkle.
Is it good?
You also have Tua. If you don't like him, I know you know him from Alabama, but if you don't, you have two first-rounders
he knows
next
him the best.
Year. And you have $70 million to play with, so go get it.
Tell him about the taxes.
Yeah. Tell him that I take the Jacksonville job, too, before the Giants.
Nice.
I'm a good bowler.
No, no, I like
that
it.
I didn't
no taxes
strike.
There, either.
Well, that was a lot.
If we get a response, that would be great. But my Giants sell is, well, you guys already did your Dolphins thing.
Yeah. Is there something, though, that we're missing?
Giants.
Tell me.
The Giants.
What is that?
It's a crown jewel franchise in the NFL. Yeah. It's New York. You're a star here. Yeah. You could be a star anywhere. And I guess I tried.
Is it attractive to someone that has a – is there a personality out there, Shrakes? It's like, I can go in here and there's obviously a standard because it's a great franchise, crown jewel, but that I can create whatever I want. There's no identity to this team. You walk in that room, you got issues up the wazoo. Like, there's no identity to the team and you can craft that. Is that attractive to someone?
I don't know. I don't know about their roster right now. I don't know about the situation. And when you look at just the way it all went down with Joe Judge at the end there,
no.
You're going to really have to make a lot of key decisions. And I still think the Giants' job is an awesome one. You've got all those Lombardi trophies there, but guys, I couldn't disrespect anybody who says, "Hey, I'm going to take the Miami gig instead."
Sure.
Peter, what's something you need to get up your chest?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that as we talk and wrap up that Sunday night divisional round game between the Bills and the Chiefs, I thought Josh Allen showed a tremendous amount of grace and class in defeat. It could have been very easy for Allen to come out in a press conference afterwards and complain. A, about the officiating, B, about the overtime rules. When he was asked about the overtime rules, I found it very interesting that this 25-year-old man came out and said this.
The rules are what they are, and I can't complain about that, because if it was the other way around, we'd be celebrating too. So it is what it is at this point. We didn't make enough plays tonight.
So yesterday, he gets another opportunity, another bite at the apple, and everyone had already weighed in on this thing, and it had been a little bit easier. Hey, 24 hours removed, now let me come in and say here, yes, we lost in overtime, and here's maybe some other solutions, or I would like to see the rules change. Josh Allen asked about it again on Monday. Here was his response.
It is what it is. If you go back a few years ago, the Chiefs lost in a very similar situation to the Patriots, and I think the next year, those Chiefs went on to win the Super Bowl. So it is what it is. You know, I'm not one to try to change rules or complain about the rules. They are what they are.
My point is this. It's not about how noble it is to not complain. That's what we do. It's fine. Mm-hmm. My point is, this guy knows he's getting back there. This guy knows he's getting back there, and there is no point in crying over spilled milk. He knows that he left it all on the field and that he has no fear going up against those guys again. I came away from this game having more respect and want to embrace Josh Allen more than I possibly could have if they had won 41-0. His grace in defeat, his class, and then the utter confidence on that sideline throughout, pumping up his team. We are so lucky as an NFL to have guys like Mahomes and guys like Burrow and guys like Herbert. And now this guy, Josh Allen, I just came away with such respect. So as we wrap up the Bills season and we pick apart what they did in the final 13 seconds, let's tip our caps to Josh Allen. Not only the player, but the man took defeat with class and grace. And I think that says a lot about who he is and what that team is going to be led by over the next couple of
really
years.
Really well said.
Really, really well said. And listen, I hope he gets back. It's tough.
Yeah.
Marino thought he was getting back. It's hard. It's tough. imagine there's a baseball game and it's Yankees Red Sox. Okay, and it's big time, and it's an elimination game, and it's on Fox, and Joe Buck's on the call, and it's at Fenway Park, and they go through 9 innings, and it's 5-5. The Yankees come up in the top of the 10th. They get a couple hits, and they go up 6-5, and the game's over. It's over. The Red Sox don't get to go up to bat. It's just over. The Yankees celebrate, and it's over, and that's it. That's what we have right now. That's what we have right now. And the next day, people say, if you don't want to lose, don't let them get on base. Don't let them get the hit up the middle. It happened. That's what we have right now. And when it comes to overtime change, I don't want to reinvent the wheel. I don't want science fiction. I don't want some crazy ESPN 8, LSU Tech versus Texas A&M, whatever, 75-76. That's beneath the NFL. That's not becoming. What I suggest is a much more palatable change to overtime in the playoffs only. Playoffs only, I suggest you play a standard 10-minute period from start to finish. 10-minute period, doesn't matter who scores. You could win by 3 touchdowns in that 10 minutes if you want. I think the only change I want is all touchdowns must be followed by a 2-point conversion. Okay. And that is it. 10-minute period. You can do the coin toss if you want. Keep the damn coin toss. Whoever wins it gets the ball. 2-point conversions are mandatory. 10 minutes start to finish. And that is the only change I would like. I would even throw in, because I know some really established former players who are not thrilled with the overtime rule and do not want to be out there longer and say, I don't want to play more snaps. If I needed to throw this in, I would say, I don't even need overtime in the regular season. Screw it. The games are tied. Fine. Eliminate overtime games in the regular season. I really don't think the stakes are there. We played 4 quarters and you're tied 16-16. You tie. But in the playoffs, I really do think that it is a bit of an undermining of that game last night, or Sunday night, the way that it ended. And I don't think it's terribly difficult to fix, and I don't think you have to have pearl clutching to fix it. You start with the 10-minute overtime, just finish it. That's all I'm asking, and I think it'd be far more palatable for the average fan, the diehard fan, and I think the players with their playoff life on the line would be willing to play a couple more series to do it. That's my suggestion. I'd like to see it happen. Yes, Peter?
What happens if the first team gets the ball?
Mm-hmm.
Goes on a 9-minute, 57-second drive, kicks a field goal and wins. Are we not having the same exact conversation under this new premise?
I think it's far more digestible. A 10-minute drive at the end of a 4-quarter game, I think, would be far rarer than Mahomes going ding, 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 the game is over. 10 minutes, I don't need a full quarter's 15, just 10. And so the question of, well, what happens if there's a tie after, if they're overtime, then you have to play another one. And maybe it's a 5-minute period. I will say this. It's exceedingly rare for double overtime. We've had double overtime rules for years. It almost never happens. And if it does, maybe it's a 5-minute period. Maybe it's an 8. But it's a period. It's not just we batted and got a couple singles and we won. That's my thought.
Right. 2 points that you make that are very, very good. You have to put some type of time restraint on it. You just can't play forever. Like college, how many overtime? 6, 7, 8. Mm-hmm. You can't do that to pro athletes with the roster. The other thing is, overtime's not necessary during the regular season. Especially most teams are on those short weeks getting ready for it.
It's great.
I like those 2 concepts right there. Very, very acceptable as we move forward. All this comes up with the epic divisional weekend, which I'm going to try to describe what happened.
Okay.
And in those 4 games, it started off with Cincinnati and Tennessee. Tennessee's the number 1 seed. They're getting the king back, probably the most feared player in the NFL. And the Bengals and Joe Burrow, he gets knocked around. But, man, he sits in there like an old gunslinger, takes down the number 1 seed in a classic NFL matchup, 1916. Then we go, 49ers are going to go to Green Bay and smack them. They pulled it off. Might be Aaron Rodgers' last game as a Packer. And if that wasn't enough for you for the weekend, let's go to Tom Terrific. TB12. He gets eliminated by Matthew Stafford at the buzzer. A 0 blitz down the middle after they had tied up the game after an epic comeback. So, and if that wasn't enough for you, Bills Mafia, you're going to go to Kansas City and cry because the overtime, oh, you didn't get a chance, but your quarterback called tails, and your defense that was number 1 in the league. What happened to the slogan, defense wins championships? Huh. They must have swallowed that one. But that's the type of weekend that we have. We could have 2 legendary players not playing the game anymore, and sports fans wouldn't be upset because we have so many bright stars and so many good quarterbacks going into our future. That's kind of my description of what I saw in those 4 games Saturday and Sunday.
Best weekend ever in football?
Best weekend.
In ever. Your memory of your lifetime?
Yes, even including the overtime.
Even including the overtime. Why don't they just stop him, Kyle?
They can't.
No. I don't think the Chiefs could have stopped him either.
I totally appreciate that take. And typically after something like this, and Peter, you were kind of on this yesterday. First of all, the change overtime rules, that's an exhausting, obnoxious take. But I think it went all the way over to where just stop them became the obnoxious take. And that became the more rote stock take.
Can I say real quick? So three years ago, the Chiefs proposed a different overtime rule. Mm-hmm. And I tweeted this yesterday. I went back into my competition committee handbook that I have. And their proposal was before the game, we already know who gets the overtime coin toss. So that way you could prepare for fourth quarter. How do we want to handle this? Do we want to go for the win now? Do we want to go for the tie? You would prepare. And it didn't even get to the final stages. No. It was voted down by everybody. But I thought that was an interesting wrinkle, too. So you know going into overtime, we get the ball first in overtime.
Yeah. And to those Chiefs fans who say we got screwed, too. You did. I don't think the Patriots would have stopped Mahomes if he got the ball that day. And I would like to have seen him have it, too. We just can't go back.
It was the most exciting week in the football ever, and it ended in heartbreaking fashion for the Buffalo Bills. Joining us right now is a wide receiver who put up one of the best performances in NFL history in just two seasons in the NFL. He's already racked up 18 total touchdowns and over 400 receiving yards, including the playoffs. Ladies and gentlemen, please say good morning, football, to Bills Whiteout, touchdown machine, Gabriel.
Let's go! What up? Hey,
thank you. Thanks, Gabe, for that dope-ass introduction. I love that.
Yeah. Hey, you're welcome, Gabe. We're so happy to have you on the show. We were texting each other, tweeting about you, despite the loss, and I know and how you wanted it to. Your performance on the field was a revelation. More than 200 receiving yards, four touchdowns, the first person in NFL playoff history to have four of those things in a single game. What was going through your head when you kept starting to score touchdown after touchdown? Take us through your mindset.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like a dream, you know. After the second one, you know, I just kept looking at my teammates as they were running down to me every time I scored. I was just putting my hands, you know, out in the open, just so surprised on what was going on right now, the history that was being made. I was glad I was just being able to, you know, execute at such a high level the opportunities I was getting that night.
It was an amazing performance, but the one touchdown that everyone's talking about is the 27-yarder on 4th and 13. The route that you put on your old college teammate, Mike Hughes, blew up on social media, but let's go through it a little bit. What are the origins of this play, this route, and Josh Allen finding you? And we're doing, you know, hey, look, when Allen Iverson crosses up Michael Jordan, we do the same reaction. It's not anything against Mike Hughes. It's a heck of a route, Gabriel. Take us through it.
Yeah, no, that's my guy. I got a lot of respect for him. I know it was fourth down on this play, and we actually caught a bull route this play, so I was going to run an out cut right at the sticks to try and get the first down. But we felt like they were going to try and play the sticks, and, you know, Josh got a double move, and I was able to, you know, go out there and execute it. I thought it was a great call, and it turned out to be, you know, the best decision we made.
It was absolutely beautiful. We just love it, and it was an incredible night. I know it didn't end how you guys wanted it to, but Josh was amazing. He was absolutely magnificent. It might be the best game he'd ever played, unless it was the week before against New England. There's a clip of him, Gabriel, screaming on the sideline and being fired up and getting you guys fired up. What was it like? What was the Josh Allen experience like that night? What was he like in the huddle? What was he like on the sideline? Just tell us everything.
You know, Josh told us before the game he's going to give us everything he's got, and he's going to play the best game he's ever played, and, you know, that's what he was doing. Josh is a natural-born competitor. When he goes out there in his game time, It's a different Josh Allen, and I love to see that out of him because Josh truly wants to win. He's really hard on himself, and he tries to go out there and play the best he can for us. He does it for the brothers on that sideline, and you trust 17 every time he's out there on that field.
Despite not getting the type of results that you guys wanted, we on this show know it's not the end for the Buffalo Bills, just the beginning. But give me what your biggest takeaway, because you and I were talking off camera, of how you're going to approach the offseason and getting ready for 2022.
Exactly. I feel like now I've kind of put my name out there and what I can do and who I am. And I know that'll put a bigger target on my back. And, you know, the Bills already have a target on our back as well because we are a good football team. And, you know, we'll definitely be ready for next year. And, you know, but when it comes to the training, it'll be the same stuff. Me and my guy back home train hard and we train long, and I got a lot of trust that this offseason is going to be a great one.
We do too, and we'll be watching, and we cannot wait for next season. But before we get to next season, you guys play four quarters. Josh goes out for the coin toss. He calls tails. It's heads. The Chiefs get the ball. You guys never get back on the field. The night Josh was having, the entire offense was having, you never got back in the field. Gabe, it's been a couple days. I'm sure you'd have a chance to digest this, and there's been a lot of opinions about it. Should overtime be changed, do you think? Not just for you guys, but for other teams that are going to be in that position of never being able to see the ball on offense in overtime in a game with that kind of stakes. What would you like to see happen with overtime moving forward?
Yeah, that's a hard question because, again, you know, if the toying cost comes our way, you know, it'll definitely be a different kind of outcome. Basically, it was a game of who wins that coin toss based how both the offenses were moving. If they did change the rule, it'd be something that I would definitely not be against, clearly, what happened to us on Sunday night. But, you know, at the end of the day, like I said, if it was us on the other side of that coin toss, you know, I wouldn't be arguing the results. So got to give respect to those.
No doubt.
It's well said. Now, before we let you go, we wanted to give you a chance to talk to Bills fans directly here. A lot of them watch our show. Maybe they didn't watch it yesterday because they were upset, but here they are listening to you. Four touchdowns, brilliant performance, bright future. What do you want to say to Bills fans right now?
Love their commitment. You know, we came home that night on the plane and we had a bunch of fans right outside of our end plate cheering us on as we walked to our cars to drive home and just showing the love and support that they always do. You know, there's no better fans in the nation than Bills Mafia, and I'm so happy that I can be a part of this team and have such a great fan base like that to know I got all the love and support when I go out there on that field every single week. So much love to Bills Mafia, and, you know, just happy that I'm a part of this team.
You have our love and support here at Good Morning Football and from a Hall of Fame wide receiver in Chris Carter. We're wishing you all the best in the offseason and come hang out with us in New York sometime.
Please.
I will, for sure. Thank you guys so much.
Time for the Bud Light Celly nominees of the week. The divisional round was fantastic. First is a fired up Bengals team celebrating kicker Evan McPherson's game-winning field goal in Tennessee. Just incredible. Burrow's like, I was already on the field before he even kicked it. I knew he was going to make it. Then you've got Jimmy Garoppolo, ecstatic. Robbie Gould is perfect and seals the deal at Lambeau. And Patrick Mahomes celebrating his win with his team, a thriller against the Bills in overtime. As always, head on over to the NFL's Twitter account to vote for which Bud Light Celly you think was the best from Divisional Weekend. Let's say good morning to Will Selva. He's on the West Coast with the news. And if he has an LA area code, he could buy tickets to SoFi for the Niners-Rams round three.
Yeah, but if I was in Fresno, it would be dicey. So thank goodness I'm here. I will see what I can do. Yeah, I know. They changed that policy yesterday. But either way, we'll see. Working on that. Way, I know a lot of teams are working on trying to find. I know it is, right? There are some teams that are working to find a new head coach. Of course, none of the 8 head coaching vacancies out there have been filled. But the Panthers on Monday did tap a former head coach to be their new offensive coordinator. Former Giants head coach Ben McAdoo has agreed to terms with Carolina to be their new OC. McAdoo serving as a consultant for the Cowboys this season after previously being the Jaguars quarterbacks coach. He went 13-15 during his stint as the Giants head coach. Chiefs safety Tyrann Mathieu is still in the concussion protocol after taking an accidental knee to the head from teammate Jaron Reed. But head coach Andy Reid says Mathieu feels good, and we'll see how that goes moving forward. Mathieu played just 7 snaps in Sunday's win over the Bills. And I think we could all understand that Joe Burrow has a few not-so-pleasant flashbacks from Saturday. Yes, they beat the Titans, but Burrow was sacked 9 times. 9. The same total of sacks he had over the previous 3 games combined. But Bengals OC Brian Callahan says it's not enough to phase Joey B.
I think he plays football like a defensive player sometimes. You know, I think Zach said he plays like a linebacker, but contact has never been something he's afraid of. It never bothers him. I think that's what makes him unique. I don't think there's a lot of guys that are built like him when it comes to that mentality, because he just responds well to pressure, and it doesn't ever really affect him. Certainly over time, it can affect all quarterbacks, but he doesn't let it bother him, and he doesn't mind the physicality part of playing football, which, again, I think is unique to Joe. He never really flinches. When things go bad and he gets hit, it doesn't really bother him. He gets up, pops up, and runs off the field and comes back for the next drive. So I think that's a pretty unique trait and one that makes him pretty special.
Burrow is the first second-year QB to win at least two playoff games since 2013 when Russell Wilson did it. That year, the Seahawks went on to win the Super Bowl. Houdet Nation certainly expecting the same thing to happen there. And in years past, when we've talked about Houdet Nation, they've always looked to see who's going to be their new head coach, who can change things around. Marvin Lewis, is he the long-term answer? But now, during this coaching cycle, they're not about that. They got Zach Taylor. They got a good thing going there. But there's a lot of coaching intrigue out there, to say the least.
Mm-hmm. Good segue, Will. From who day to who dat, let's do this. Sean Payton, let's get to it. He's been the head coach in New Orleans since 2006. Ian Rappaport reported earlier this year that he's not committed to returning to the team in 2022. He has not informed Ian reported that he did not inform the organization of his plans. I'd like you to take a listen to Saints owner Gail Benson on the situation.
We don't know. You know, who knows? We'll find out soon enough, I guess. I don't think any of us know, but he'll let us know soon enough.
She did not shut it down. She said he'll let us know soon enough. Our initial thoughts about the future of Coach Sean Payton.
Turn to Jay Glazer for all things Sean Payton. They've known each other since Jay was covering the Giants in the early 2000s and Sean was the offensive coordinator. And around week 18, Jay said, there's going to be a few coaches who might step away from the game that you're going to be surprised by because of COVID and what the season was and the exhaustion and needing to take a break. And then you get the rumors that maybe there is a broadcasting chair for Sean Payton. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Sean Payton remove himself from the Saints organization, do a year of football on TV, maybe 2 years. And I still look at that bright, shiny Cowboys logo that he's always been linked to since he left Dallas when he was with Parcells and took that Saints job. I'm fascinated by what Sean does. Obviously, he's got 2 more years left on the contract. He's paid very well. He's got everything he could ever want in New Orleans as far as rule of the roast, and he's never going to be in a fight for power. But what has the last couple of years been like on Sean Payton? I think if he needs a step away to kind of regain himself and then return, we've seen it before with Jimmy Johnson, with Parcells, with several others. I wouldn't say it's a slam dunk that they're just going to figure things out in New Orleans, and I don't blame them. The situation there, salary cap's not pretty, and there might be some greener pastures for him to explore.
Yeah, not surprised by that information. I'm glad you let the fans know as far as Jay Glazer and that trail. And sometime when guys get information, you got to read more into it because they've been on that trail for a long time. The Parcells angle. Parcells and I are good friends, and he talks about Sean all the time. So the ability to be burned out, and I think as football fans, we know that we're personally going through COVID, but these teams and organizations, what they've been going through with COVID has been really, really difficult. So I wouldn't be surprised. I thought it was kind of humorous that the owner, she's a billionaire, and she kind of smirked because she's like, I paid this guy. I'm going to pay him $15 million a year for the next 3 years, and he don't know if he wants to come to work. So I guess we'll find out really, really soon. I thought that was very cute.
I'm thinking, like, Bruce Arians did a year in the media, too.
Yeah.
And kind of forgot about that. He was in the booth, and then he's like, okay, I'm ready. I also, look, COVID and all he's been through, it's also, like, coaching, especially as an offensive coach, is not as fun when you don't have a Hall of Fame quarterback. Breeze. 1 year! Yeah. Of Jameis and Taysom and injuries and that ridiculous Ian Book game, that's got to take a toll. It's much more difficult. I don't know what they're doing. Listen, most coaches are as good as their quarterback, and certainly their quality of life is based around this guy I got to deal with all day who's going to decide most of my outcomes is the quarterback. So I don't know if Jameis Winston has a long, bountiful future in New Orleans. I don't know. And I don't know if Sean Payton's saying, looking at some of the landscape around him, being like, I think I could, maybe a little time out for myself, or maybe a little reset. And so I wouldn't blame him. He's earned it. He's basically a Saints legend. And if he doesn't like what he's seeing around him, plus all the stuff off the field he's had to fight through, totally get it. Take a year. Take 2 years. Take 5 years. The second he decides he wants to coach again, someone will hire him. That's it.
It certainly sounds like Miss Benson know something because she had the opportunity there to shut it down and say, no, he is our coach. He's locked up. We'll see him. We've talked. So she left it open and probably didn't have to. So there might be something there. And sometimes when you've been somewhere a long time, whether it's 5 years, whether it's 15 years, you just find it's time to walk away. You want to change your scenery. He's been so huge to that organization and that city, of course, guiding them through Katrina, obviously controversies, obviously the death of the owner, the loss of a Hall of Fame quarterback and all of that. So if you're burnt out and you feel like it's time to move on, I can just imagine that's a really tough decision to make. But I'm excited to hear from Coach Sean Payton. At GMFB, would you have anything to add?
I think he's going to have to clean up his language a little bit. I've had a few conversations with Sean, and it's not broadcast ready yet.
Well, they said the same thing about Gruden, though. They're not going to be able to get through one quarter, and then he did it for years, right?
Oh, he fooled them on a couple different fronts.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Do you think that's what he would do? He would leave and go to broadcasting?
I think it's very, very comfortable, and then you can keep your eyes on Dallas and everything from that spot.
That's what Jimmy did. Jimmy needed a break, went to the Fox pregame show, and then the Dolphins came, and he's like, Huizenga, I'm in, let's go, I'm refreshed. It is interesting, Matt LaFleur's comments on Rodgers, we need you, we want you, please come back, and then Gail Benson, like, I don't know, we'll see. So we'll see what happens.
Good call.